south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, the other day I ran into a longtime expat who heard I had a radio show for some time, and he said, Johnny, so you have a radio show. What's it about? Now, the thing is, expats down here, especially long-term expats, don't listen to my show. They don't have to. They made all the mistakes, and now they're sitting pretty. It's those short-term expats and green gringos that listen to my show a lot. They want the inside dope on how to do things before they make those mistakes. Otherwise, you just end up spinning your wheels for a couple of years. It's very predictable. In fact, the majority of clueless gringos spin their wheels for a very long time, often going in reverse, including when I first got down here, yours truly. So this old long-term expat said, Johnny, what's your show about? And I thought for a second, and I said, it's about getting the message to first world people, the right kind of first world people, that the American dream has taken a U-turn and it's now south of the border. My mission? To wake up the first world one zombie at a time. That said, let's see how many zombies we can wake up with this email. Larry from Oklahoma says, Johnny, I speak a little bit of Spanish, and sometimes I do, as you say, try to improve my Spanish and, at the same time, figure out how things work in Latin America by searching the internet to locate some of the big Latin newspaper sites because they, like you say, offer their daily newspapers for free on the internet. It's an amazing way to really quickly learn bits of Spanish and learn about the culture in the country or the countries you might be settling into as an expat in the future. So far, so good, but I can't help but notice almost all Latin countries have government bonds that they offer to the public. Of course, you have to have tens of thousands of dollars to invest if you don't have megabucks. The big banks in Latin countries offer CDs in much lesser amounts from $1,000 on up to $1 million or so. And I can't help but notice that most of them have dollar-denominated CDs, too, as well as in the local funny money. Now, those dollar-denominated CDs are always paying about 4 to 6% more than you can get for a dollar-denominated CD in a local stateside bank. For example, I could go to my bank right now and buy a $10,000 CD and get about 1% annually. Whereas if I'm in Panama or Honduras or Costa Rica, Colombia, whatever, and go to one of their big banks, I can get about 3, 4, even 5% on a $10,000 CD. Now, those kinds of returns seem amazing when I mention them to people up in my neighborhood in the States. And sure, everyone would love to get those kind of rates. However, most people don't have that kind of money laying around to invest in anything these days. Now, the few friends I have that could invest that kind of money just chuckle at me when I mention the idea of putting money into a foreign bank. To a person, they think only a screwball would have their money in a foreign bank, especially a Latin one. They always say they want to be able to walk into their bank and visit their money. They mean, of course, visit the sleight-of-hand printouts with the ones and zeros on them. Yes, that's the mentality, at least with my supposedly intelligent friends. Not realizing, of course, or not wanting to know that their own banking system is on the verge of another huge collapse. Yes, Johnny, I too am surrounded by a large group of clueless gringos. Can't get away from them. You might call them clueless when they land in Latin America, but they're infinitely more clueless up here. As for me, after listening to quite a number of your programs, I would have no problem at all putting $10,000 U.S. into a CD in a Latin bank. Under certain provisos, of course. It would, as you say, have to be one of the top three banks in a country. It has to have been around at least 30 to 50 years. And has a track record of conservative growth that you can look up. And as you say, if you don't speak Spanish, then ask your Latin lawyer. He'll know. So putting your money into a Latin bank CD at 4, 5, or 6% in U.S. dollars, that might seem fantastic, but you should see the rates on their local funny money CDs. Yep, I've been checking those big daily Latin newspapers all right. It's easy to find what interest rates the banks are offering. They're always advertising and printing out tables of deposits and the length of time and the interest rates. Some of these banks in the Latin countries I just mentioned are offering CD rates for investing the equivalent of $10,000 or more in the neighborhood of 8, 9, 10, 11, even 12% annual interest in the local funny money, of course. Now, I know a year or so ago you spoke about bank CDs and their rates, and you have advised against CDs in the local funny money due to currency instabilities and such. All right, I get it. Johnny, I'm no gambler, but why not give it a shot? Put some of your money into a high dividend funny money CD for just a month, 3 months, or 6 months and see how it plays out. As for me, I've got my expat eyes set on some place in Colombia. I'm planning on going down there trying to make a go of it eventually. So I'm thinking going down to Colombia, checking out residency, and then depositing maybe 10,000 US in a Colombian funny money peso 6 month CD. Then I'd go back to the States to get my things in order and time that rollover 6 months later for when I come back down permanently, because I will need to use the Colombian peso, no doubt about it. They don't take dollars in most places in Colombia, I know that. So I'd be gaining in two ways. One, by the extraordinary interest rate, which is about twice what the US dollar gets down there now. And secondly, I'll be cashing in that CD in the local funny money, and that's what I'll have to use to live and pay my expenses. As opposed to if I had a US dollar CD at, let's say, 4 or 5%, even though that sounds great compared to first world CD rates, as soon as I cashed it out, I'd have to switch it back over to pesos and lose about 2 to 2.5% immediately on the buy-sell spread. Or I could keep rolling it over in a US dollar CD, but the idea is for me to use that money to live on, at least at first. So even if I had a US dollar CD down there that was paying 4% a year, for a half year I'd get 2%. And as soon as I cash it out and bought pesos, I'd lose that 2% I just gained in the buy-sell spread. So at least if you put your US dollars in a funny money CD for a very short term, if things are fairly stable, you'll almost always do better than break even. So my question is, Johnny, please tell me if I'm missing something here. Thanks, Mr. LLL, longtime listener Larry. Well, Larry, funny you should ask that question, because I did exactly that when I first came down here 20-something years ago. I bought myself a funny money CD in a Latin bank too, because the rates were extraordinary. Now, of course, I did a little research before I invested. A lot of good that did, and here's why. I asked some of the Latin people I knew to give me a recent history on the currency and how it's fared over the last couple of years, and what the prognosis was for their funny money currency for the near future. And fortunately, sometime later I figured out these were exactly the wrong people to ask, because as I've said before, but I didn't know it then, Latins absolutely love the US dollar and believe it's the gold standard. However, the irony is that most Latin families who receive their remisas from their relatives up in the States, as soon as they get that wire transfer or money order, whatever, it is in dollars, of course, so they switch it. The fact is, most Latins, even very wealthy Latins, don't put their money into US dollar CDs. They put them into the local funny money CDs. Why? Again, because they can't spend the dollars in their country. They have to switch over to the local funny money, and they always lose heavily on the buy-sell spread, which can be anywhere from 1 to 5%. So anyway, I took out a CD for a year in the local funny money, and after that year, after listening to all the local idiot experts, I got my 8 or 9%, whatever it was, and I actually did not lose money. However, during that time, that country's inflation rate was around 6.5%, so, in the end, I did come out ahead, but it was all about the luck of the draw. It had nothing to do with sound thinking or logical analysis. Would I ever do that again? Nope. In fact, if there's one long financial lesson I've learned over the past 25 years, is to never ever have too much of the local funny money currency in any one account or as a CD or an investment vehicle. And I don't recommend you have big money in a US dollar account either, but you have to have something, some kind of pad, at least a US dollar account that will cover your expenses for 6 months to a year, which in the States might be what, 30 or 40 grand for a year. Down here, if you're single, 10 or 15 grand would set you up nicely. Now, I'm no financial planner or investment counselor, but I can tell you what so many astute expats do. They don't have a lot of US dollars in the bank, but they do have U.S. funny money accounts, that is the U.S. dollar, at a local Latin bank. And, of course, a local funny money account, enough to cover maybe 2 months of expenses. And the rest they have in tangibles, gold or silver, land, housing, whatever. So whatever they have in their U.S. dollar account is kind of for emergencies, meaning a cushion or pad to cover 6 months to a year of their expenses, which is very wise and prudent to have a U.S. bank account on foreign soil. Why? Well, it was just 1 week ago when I heard from a short-term expat. He's been down here about 2.5 years now. He was freaking out because both of his U.S. bank accounts were closed out without notice. That is, his bank accounts up in the States. They said he was making too many foreign wire transfers. Duh. The guy owns a small IT company. He's got to make foreign wire transfers. And they were relatively small wire transfers, $1,000 here and there, a couple hundred. But yet, they closed his bank accounts. By the way, most long-term expats I know never dip into that dollar account because they're getting a pension from up in the States or Social Security, and they live well enough on that. Like I said, a single person can live like a king down here on a simple Social Security check. So my advice, based on the experience of so many long-term expats, is not to put any substantial funds into any funny money investments, including local stock markets or CDs, government bonds, etc. Now, a long-term expat friend of mine tells the story of when he used to live up in Mexico. And to hear this story, you'll understand why Latins believe the U.S. dollar is solid gold. In fact, almost all of them believe Fort Knox is loaded with gold and it backs up the entire U.S. monetary system. By the way, the other day I was driving along and I saw a Latin armored car service whose name was, get this, Fort Knox Armored Car Service. The words Fort Knox in English, of course, and the rest in Spanish. Talk about the gringo advantage, huh? What a bunch of idiots. But they're not the only ones. I understand that in 9 out of 10 on-the-street interviews, we're talking any big city up in the States now. The average American believes exactly the same thing. Oh, boy. Anyway, my expat friend Lee, who used to live in Mexico, now he's south of that border, said that in 1975, he bought a very nice beachfront condo in the Yucatan when the peso was 12 to $1, at which time he put about 50,000 U.S. dollar into a peso CD. And he said to me he should have known better because it was paying 18% annually. So a year later, in 1976, the peso had devaluated 25% against the dollar. So, in effect, he lost 7% of his money. That's 25% minus 18%, 7%. No, he wasn't stupid enough to roll it over, although the people in the bank tried to assure him that the peso was stabilizing. Instead, he took his licking and changed it back into dollars, and in the buy-sell ratio and switching it, he lost another 3.5%. So in the end, he lost just a little over 10% of his money by being in the peso. And then he said, in the following years, the peso went into free fall. In fact, he said, in 1993, they created an entirely new peso. From then on, one of the new pesos was equal to 1,000 of the old ones. That means the government dropped 3 zeros off of the old peso. And today, he says, you can look up the peso to dollar rate, and it's around 16.6, something like that. But if you, like my expat friend Lee, lived in Mexico before 1993, you'd know it's not 16.6 pesos to the dollar. In reality, it's 16,600 pesos to the dollar. Now that should scare the crap out of you, and could be exactly what happens up in the States in a few years, so don't want to be there either. Now, of course, that's an extreme example, but let's talk about a more normal case, what happens in most other Latin countries. And let's exclude Venezuela and Argentina now, because their monetary systems are out of control. With their inflation rates at 30 to 60% a year, you don't want to be living there either. That said, I'd like to give the more moderate example of Guatemala's monetary system. Never had hyperinflation, never dropped zeros off their currency. In other words, their currency is a decent example of Latin American stability. When you talk to Guatemalans over 50 years old, they all remember a time when the quetzal, that's the local funny money, was 1-to-1 with the dollar. And all the people over 70 years old remember when the Guatemala quetzal was 1-to-1 with not only the U.S. dollar, but the Mexican peso too. All three currencies at parity nearly a half a century ago. Which, believe it or not, is why today when you talk to an old-time Guatemalan guy, he still calls his local money, the quetzal, a peso. For example, if you're at a convenience store or food stand and there's an old-timer waiting on you, a guy over 70 years old, he'll often say that'll be 2 pesos, 2 pesos, when he really means 2 quetzales.
even though right now the peso is worth like about a half of a quetzal.
Now, over the last 30 or 40 years, as the Mexican peso went from 16,000 to 16 right now, and the government pulled three zeros off the bills so that it didn't look like Zimbabwe money. Meanwhile, over that period of time, the quetzal, the Guatemalan funny money, was never officially devalued. Sure, inflation wiped it out, against the dollar, that is. The locals are well aware of the fact that since its one-to-one parity with the dollar some 50 years ago, it's lost 80% of its value against the dollar. So these are all just stark lessons to anyone who considers investments in the local funny money currencies. But Latin locals, even the smartest of them, even ones with degrees in economics and finance,
total loser careers if you ask me. What they've never investigated or bothered to learn, or no one's told them, is that the U.S. dollar, in the last 40 or 50 years, that same period of time we're talking about now, has lost 80% of its value, too. That's why in the 60s you could still buy a brand new no-frills car, a General Motors product, for $2,500 or less. Whereas today, a no-frills car like that will cost you $15,000. About 7 or 8 times the 60s price. Enough said about that. Now for a sad story.
You longtime listeners know I like to go to those big, wild, chaotic, crazy food markets.
I mean, where else could you get 4 or 5, even 6 pineapples for a buck? Oh, the wonders of Latin America. Of course, if you go to Walmart or Costco or any of the modern supermarket chains down here, you'll pay 3, 4, 5 times that. And the funny thing is, upscale Latins and Latins moving on up never want to be seen at those big markets because, well, for them it's too low class and scruffy and reminds them of their roots.
Now, that's not to say I haven't been parked right next to a gigantic bulletproof SUV in a parking lot near the big market with this snooty boss lady in the car sending her cleaning lady out to do some shopping to save some dough. Because, you know, it would be unthinkable for the boss lady to actually get out of the car and walk through that chaotic mess.
By the way, the boss lady of the house is called Hefa. That's H-E-F-A, like heifer.
And of course, the male boss is the Jefe,
meaning boss or boss man.
Which is why when you're out buying things in those big markets or practically anywhere, usually the workers will say, "Sí, Jefe." Just like up in the States, workers will address the guy they're working for as boss. Same thing. But I digress as usual. Anyway, I was in one of those wild, chaotic markets the other day, and there was a lady selling chicken. Of course, they were all plucked, defeathered, and gutted, and the half dozen or so live ones in crates under the table didn't seem to know they were next on the menu. Anyway, she had this big wooden table with 3 separate large piles of chicken and chicken parts for sale. Now, the chicken pieces in the pile on the left looked like they'd been bleached in Clorox. They had the look of a dead body that had washed up on shore in a CSI episode.
Totally disgusting,
but only compared to the next pile of chickens in the center, which were larger, much healthier looking for dead chickens, that is.
The meat and the skin and the bones and the cartilage of wide variety of colors, unlike the pale, cadaverous looking chickens in the pile to the left. Then there was another pile of chickens to the right, and they were even larger, like small turkeys.
Now let me set this up a little bit for you. It's a very crowded, chaotic plaza. There's a kind of makeshift roof over the place, and when it rains, well, it seeps through everywhere. And there's a small line of about 5 or 10 people waiting to buy chicken,
almost all of them lined up in front of the disgusting, white, cadaverous-looking stuff. The buyers, mostly short, brown, indigenous ladies, and the working poor. Now, remember, there's maybe 500 or more people wandering around this area, and I'm the only gringo. And to tell you the truth, I like it that way.
Now, I was standing in front of the center pile of chickens, and I asked the lady in charge, she's got a big meat cleaver and some big arms, too, I said, "What's the difference between these 3 types of chickens? And more to the point, why are those ugly, white, cadaverous-looking things so popular? Why are they selling like hotcakes, and the others, well, they're getting no action?" And she said, "Tyson, Estados Unidos." And I said, "What?" And again, she said, "Estados Unidos, Tyson." And then she explained, those were special chickens imported from the U.S., Tyson chickens. And they were selling for the amazingly low price of 75 cents a pound. Now, I hear you pay up in the States about $1 to $1.50 a pound for your chlorinated injected Tyson chickens. Which is why I don't get it.
Or maybe they're shipping the extremely contaminated mutant chickens down here to Latin America. Could be. Just imagine one of those gigantic chicken farm warehouses that Tyson has up in the States, where chickens are hatched, live and die, and never see the light of day. Not to mention, the only time they get to actually walk out of their stalls is when they're making the death march. Then I guess that's when they soak them in chemicals that make them look a lot like overripe, waterlogged human cadavers. Now I can imagine all the rejects are shipped down to Latin America. And still, after all that shipping, a couple of thousand miles in some cases, somehow the locals down here can still make a profit at 75 cents a pound. And that's why they're so popular down here. In fact, at the local Walmarts and Costcos, they sell those very same Tyson chickens, only they're frozen and nicely vacuum-packed. Whereas those sad and pitiful Tyson pollos I got to see were in big, unpackaged heaps. And by the way, the chicken in the middle pile was driveway chicken, as I call them, or what they call down here patio chicken, chicken from the patio, which are not injected with chemicals and killed 3 months ago or so, then soaked in some other crappy brine, and then flash frozen and shipped 1,000 miles. Nope, those driveway chickens in front of you are killed as needed, with live squawking replacements rustling around under the table to prove it. And what do they cost? Get this, $1.40 a pound. Just what the Tyson crap costs up in the States. Which is twice as much as the Tyson chicken goes for right on the next slab. I don't get it. How can you have driveway chickens that you rarely have to feed? They just peck away in the yard at insects and stuff. You don't have to ship them anywhere. You just haul them to the local market a mile or two away. How can Tyson undercut them by half? That creates a big problem. You can see it's having a devastating effect on the local Latin public. They're not killing and eating the driveway chickens anymore. Unless, of course, a person or a family's got their own little plot of land and can have a few chickens around. The millions upon millions of Latin city dwellers can't do that. They live in tight quarters. Now, because most of Latin America is so poor, it's all about the money. Imported, chemically injected chickens like Tyson have become the chicken of choice for city-dwelling populations and, by the way, restaurants, etc. And all those uppity gringo wannabes who go to Walmart and Costco prefer Tyson cadaver chickens too, because they're 100% imported gringo chickens and everything gringo is good. The fact is, you can't even get the homegrown equivalent of a driveway chicken in Costco or Walmart. So, you've got hormone-injected cadaverous chickens coming down in mass quantities from the first world, being snapped up at half the price of the local stuff. So I can see why in the time I've been down here, 25 years now, the Latin population in general has grown much fatter and have had many more health problems than they did years ago, back when their diets didn't consist of cheap junk food daily. And now, on top of that crap, there's Tyson. And years ago, there was no such thing as an addiction to soft drinks because Latins just couldn't afford them. But now, every young Latin kid with some change runs out and gets himself some Cheetos and Coca-Cola clones. In fact, 20 or 25 years ago, the average kid down here had a Coca-Cola or an orange soft drink once or twice a week. And McDonald's, Wendy's, and Pizza Hut only existed for birthdays and special occasions. And now the city kids and adolescents are addicted. And though the story is a sad one, there is a positive side. Driveway chickens are still available and probably always will be. But what was in that third pile of chickens? Well, it turns out those are the most desirable chickens of all. Roosters, or gallos in Spanish. And local Latins have a million different ways of preparing those things. And most famously, they make a rooster or gallo soup, or caldo in Spanish. That's C-A-L-D-O. Now, personally, I don't like rooster meat or gallo soup, whatever. It's way too tough. Anyway, a pound of driveway rooster will cost you about $1.60 a pound. Oh, and let me warn you about one thing. If you get invited to a regular Latin person's house, and they tell you they've got a special treat, caldo de patas, on the menu. That's caldo de patas. Beware. You're going to be served chicken feet soup, and to me, it's one of the most disgusting-looking things I've ever seen. Imagine a dozen or so stinky chicken feet swarming around your spoon. So not only are you suddenly completely without an appetite, you're stuck listening to a whole table full of Latins crunching away on that stuff. Nope, it ain't pretty. Yet, with some families, even wealthy families, it's a specialty of the house, especially on Sunday. I know. It's a cultural thing. You like what you were brought up on. It reminds me some years ago when I lived in England, people said, how could you eat that disgusting peanut butter? Most Brits can't stomach it. Now, if you can find a jar of peanut butter in England and eat it in front of a Brit, they'll usually make a disgusting face in front of you. It's the same kind of face you'll try to suppress when you're offered a heaping helping of that chicken feet soup. What do you do when faced with such a dilemma? Well, when no one's looking, I always kind of fish the feet out and deftly toss them one at a time under the table where there's always a willing dog or two. Or you can join the happy crowd and crunch away. And now a few special announcements. Now remember, I mentioned last week that I'm no longer with the expatwisdom.com website. Instead, I'm affiliated with a much more active website called thenewexpat.com. It's run by a good friend of mine, Mr. John Galt, who came down to one of my first expat seminars, and now he's down here permanently. So go to www.thenewexpat.com for some really excellent boots-on-the-ground information from an expat who tells you exactly what it's like to be a new expat stumbling his way through paradise. And of course, you'll see my stuff on there too, so check it out. Now, thenewexpat.com is a work in progress, but do note, our webmaster, John Galt, has now put together a slideshow to go with each of my expat file shows. So, it's really worth it just to go to that site and see the slides that go along with each show. I'll say it again, Mr. Galt, very well done. Oh, and note, when you go to thenewexpat.com website, up near the top of the main page, you'll see there's a link for Johnny Mueller's 2016 Latin American Insider Seminar. So do click on that link if you want more information on my upcoming January seminar. And remember, if you sign up by November 1st, that's almost a month away, you get a $500 per person discount. And of course, all you people who signed up for the Gold Membership Program some time ago, you get an additional $100 discount if you attend. And by the way, those of you who plan on coming early or staying on after the seminar like so many do, my seminar coordinator, Donnie, and my translator ladies will set you up with a fantastic itinerary that your average touring gringo would have no idea even existed. Even better, if you come early or stay on a few days or even weeks past the seminar, Mr. John Galt himself has promised to lead the way as a guide. You won't find a better, more enlightened, and more entertaining guide. So anyway, along with our seminar secret weapons, our translator ladies, we have Mr. John Galt himself, and of course, yours truly.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.